This is an interview with Sister Beatrice for the Beaverton History Project. The interview is being conducted by Shirley Tanzer at St. Mary's of the Valley. The date today is November 4th, 1981. This is Tape 1, Side 1.
Her grandmother. Do you remember that? How did she move in the boat?
Well, what did she remember?
About her grandmother. She was the first one out of 12 children. She was all the attention of anybody else there.
And, was her mother with her?
Yes, her mother was with her too. My father was born in Switzerland, and he settled after he came over a few years old. So my mother lived quite a long time before daddy was. And he settled in Wisconsin, got a job. But his parents came over earlier to see how America was. They always thought America had gold, dollars were all over every place. He found out he had to work hard. And finally, it was basically, I don't know exactly what day they came over with. He didn't like to be under other people, so he just wanted to get another job. He came out of Portland and met a man that had an interest in dairies. And he wanted a partner. So he asked Dad to be a partner to buy the dairy farm near West Portland. And he looked at the at the time. And somehow or other, I don't know, a priest decided that my mother should get married to somebody. I don't know just how to get how he got in contact with it. He said, I have a young man that I think would be nice to be married. And the main reason why this priest wanted my daddy to meet my mother was because he didn't have a chance to practice his religion as a Catholic. And that priest thought my mother could persuade him to leave that job and practice his religion. He had to deliver milk all the time, and Sunday every day. So somehow or other, I don't know exactly how they met, but it was a very short courtship, very short. And they got married. Very suddenly, they got married in 1903. In November, no, 1924, March 24th. And they decided they're going to buy a farm with her parents. They thought they could make a living on a farm with both parents because my grandfather on my mother's side was a carpenter. And he built a lot of houses. I knew his job was not. But my father worked always as a, I guess, cows. He liked cows. So. So therefore, they moved on this farm, way up here at Temple Mountain, 5 miles from here.
Where was this?
From Portland. They moved out when they bought the farm. And so they had to sell that milk plant from that man. And they went to Cooper Mountain, which is where, you know where 185th Avenue is?
Yes.
Way up to the hill, about 2 miles. Then on one place there's a road that passed right past our farm, and they call it Riggert Road. And my father lived there, and then when he died in 1960. My father died in 1960. My mother died in 1957. They both died at Marion Home in Sublimity because they needed more care than what my brothers and sisters could give them, because they all got married and had families. So
I do want to ask you what your mother's maiden name was.
Yes, Crescentia Tanzer.
Your mother's?
And my grandmother's name was the same. And I have an aunt that was named Sister Crescentia. That was a very important first name in the Bavarian country, Germany. It was a rich place. A lot of advantages. I don't know what advantages. They didn't ever tell, but they thought they could make more money.
They didn't say, did they mention anything about persecution or
no.
the fact that
no,
they were...
No, they were free to practice their religion. There wasn't any, not political or religious or in any way, no matter what angle you want to look at it, they were free people. They didn't have anybody... telling them what to do. They could. My daddy liked to climb mountains, and one time he went climbing mountains, and I guess he was up too long, and he froze his toes.
Oh.
He had to be in the hospital on Christmas Day. And you know what he remembers of that? The day that Christmas came, they gave him a little Christmas tree in bed.
Now, where was this?
In Switzerland.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. So it made a big impression on him. Now, I don't know how old he was when that happened, but... Rosie's toes.
Your paternal grandparents, the Rickard grandparents,
yes.
Rickard grandparents, did they remain in this country?
The only one that came over was my father. Mm-hmm. And when his father and mother came to see what kind of a place it was, they went back and stayed there. He never did come out. Now, I have a niece that went to Switzerland 2 years ago and went back to this family that my father lived in, and there's still a lot of Rickards over there, and they have the stove that when my father's father and mother, that's my grandfather, great-grandfather, got married. I don't know who gave them the stove, but they had a wedding present of a beautiful stove, and in back of that stove, this is my niece, Rita Rickard, that tells this story. We never knew that. My daddy never told that story. And in back of the stove was a plaque that said this was a donation for a wedding present. And it is still being used by some of the members of the family.
How wonderful.
I remember Daddy telling about that. And he also remembered very much, he must have had a very good teacher, about his school days. Mr. Hensel, I think, was his name. And he even had a picture of him it's in the family. My sister has that picture. And it's got a little X mark, his name was Alois. My dad's name was Alois. Where he has a funny little skull cap and those little collars, you know, and big shoes. And there was a whole big group of children there. It was a very, must have been a primary grade, first, second, and third, fourth grade, because they're very small children. But now, came to that farm. No one had been living on that farm for 30 years. Now, this land was bought by my father from a man by the name of Mr. Anton Burkhardt. And this man bought it from Homestead in 1862. My father bought it in 1903. So there was a period of about 5 or 6 years that nobody lived on it. Mm-hmm. During that time, when the Burkharts bought that farm, they had planted a hop yard, a hop house, but no dryer. But you have to have a dryer, and that's why when my folks came there, they didn't know where to go to get dryers, so they pulled out the hops.
Oh.
And there were a lot of apple trees, pear trees, prune trees, berries, and the trees had so much moss on them. For 30 years, no one lived on it. Evidently, it looked too bad. But Mr. Burkhardt must have had a lot of money to be able to start a big farm like that. They had to take rakes and hoes and scrape down the moss from the trees And when a tree isn't pruned, it gets, you know, a lot of shoots out. They had to take 20-foot ladders and cut off a lot of the trees. And all during those years that my father had that orchard, those trees were still too tall. So when my brother bought the farm from my dad, he wasn't able to take care of it anymore. Of course, my brother also planted peach trees. There were no peach trees, I think two, and they always got curly leaf, so my daddy didn't bother because they were too particular. But my daddy did ask his folks in Switzerland to send him some of those great big nuts. They had a nut farm in Switzerland. Oh, they were huge, about this big. Mm. Oh, I never saw such big nuts. Oh, they're just huge. I never saw anyone like that. But we used to give our teacher one of those big nuts in a Christmas present that we used, little children used to give him. I remember that. So later on, my dad ordered trees from the Stark Nursery Company, and he, towards the end, he had 6 and 7 tons. We had to send him to the dryer at, let me see what's the name of the, Canby, because we couldn't manage. We had built prune dryer. See, there were prunes there. When sometimes prunes get ripe too fast and they spoil, so we dried them. And one, the first one that they built burnt. So my mother was a carpenter too, so she went and started building another second one. And we had many hours of picking up and shaking the trees and picking the walnuts. I mean, yeah, walnuts too. After the prunes were dry, we had to dry some of the walnuts when we didn't have very many in the beginning, you know. And so they made a good deal out of this farm. But my grandparents, they found out that it was not feasible to stay there because there wasn't enough income to supply for two families. See, my grandparents still had two children at home. And later on, in 1910, they became nuns here. One is still living. She's 87 years old. And she was a teacher. Both of them were teachers. And she has had a senility. She can't remember anything. She can talk to you. 2 minutes later, she doesn't know what she said. But she's nice to deal with. Her name is Sister Presencia, too. She's over at Maryville. She needs attention all the time. One day, about three years ago, she was in the dining room taking a cup of coffee, and all at once, she fell. Mm-hmm. And they picked her up, and they brought her to the hospital. She had shattered a hip, so she can't walk anymore. Mm-hmm. But she says she doesn't realize what really happened to her. But when people get old, their bones just break automatically, not because they fell. She fell because her bone got shattered. And then, let's see, so they had to move out. And on this farm, when they moved out to the farm, there was a barn that was leaning over towards the windward side. And the house, Sister Presencia even remembers that. She was 10 years old when she moved out to this farm. The rats were all over every place in the house. And I don't know what else was in there, all kinds of weeds and things like that. And so they moved back to Portland. They didn't stay there very long. So that was the end of that. But my father and mother, they started to clear land, and my grandfather built the house for them later on. He had to have help for the chimneys. He wasn't a chimney maker or anything like that. But I remember when we moved in from the old house to the new house, we just put a plank on the front porch and the back porch of the other house and walked across it and took everything to the new house.
Was the new house much larger?
Oh, yes. It was a beautiful house. It's still standing, the new house. This was, must have been about 1910, maybe 8. It was, I don't know just what year. I didn't put that down in my diary. I keep a diary, too, most of the time. And
Who lives in the house now?
I don't know exactly, but it's a sad story. See, when my father couldn't take care of the farm anymore, and none of it, see, He had 14 children. He got married and had 14 children. The first one died. And so since nobody wanted it in the family, they sold it to a developer. And the developer has just 20, 30 houses. But our old house is towards the another end of the, it was hilly. There were a lot of hills there. Most of the fruit trees are gone. There are a few in between the houses that they left. But one time there was a group of young people that owned the house, and they had a rock festival. And in this rock festival, they just, no permission from anybody, the owner or anybody. They had hundreds of people there, no sanitation, no water, no nothing. And when my niece, they lived, they had built a house right across from my folks' land, and they couldn't even get into their house because there were so many cars around their front yard and their lawn. And they got reported because you have to have special permission, but then that group of people had to move out. Then they had an old bachelor living in there, and he didn't know how to take care of the place. And I don't know how many different people lived in there, and nobody took much of an interest in the trees or anything. So my brother could see that there wasn't any way that they could take care of the farm. Well, so therefore, the house is there, and every once in a while they get renters, undesirable ones usually, like you do, you know, when it's a rundown house. But it was a beautiful home.
Does your brother still own the home?
No. He had to sell it to those developers. It was a real estate man, and then the developers came and bought it from them.
I see.
And my brother now lives with his charming wife, and he married a girl by the name of Anna Baker. Ann Baker. No, Ann Spearing. My other brother married a Baker girl. I got mixed up a bit. Well, anyway, they have 50 grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
One family, when she got married, she says, I want 12 children. That's the second oldest one. And she lives right across from the old home farm. They built themselves a new, brand new house. She married a man by the name of Lamb, John Lamb, and he's a insurance man. And he also worked in Tektronix. I think he's still working at Tektronix, selling insurance, things like that. So he got 12 children. The youngest one is 5 years old, and I just asked her the other day. And another one of the Riggert children, 14, wanted a lot of children. She's got 9 now, and she adopted one. Before she was even married, she adopted. She worked in a child care center in Portland, Jewish, and they had asked her to adopt the little child that was born. They could tell that it was handicapped. It wasn't, and they thought that being in a home where there's children, because they knew that she wanted children, and he's in first year high school now. But he had to go to special school. He really needed quite a bit of attention, and he still needs attention. He still is not normal with the rest of the children. They have quarrels and things like that because he just doesn't understand a lot of things. But they have put him in special classes in the high school in Hillsboro, and they say he's doing fine because he has to have special attention. Even yet.
So your own family, there were 12 children?
No, in my own division, yeah. There were only 8.
There were 8, I see.
Uh-huh. And 2 of them died as babies. One was a cripple. Mm-hmm. And then we got another one in its place, and he's out in a... He has retired, too. He, my youngest brother, he's 16 years younger than I am. I was 12 years old when he was born, so I took care of him like mother did, except I couldn't nurse him. So I took him out in the field where Mama was working, and then came home and finished his breakfast and his everything else. So anyway, it was, let's see, now where did I forgot where
Lee, I wanted to ask you about your brothers and sisters.
Yes, uh-huh. Well, my oldest brother got married, and they didn't have any children for 11 years. And my second oldest brother got married first, and he's the one that had the 12 children, 14 children. And so, let's see, where am I going to continue? The first one died, buried up at Cooper Mountain Cemetery. We have a cemetery up there, and my brother took care of it and cleaned it up, and there are 25 graves up there, and they still keep it up. We had a church up there, too. Well, that brother, I had the 12 that lived, no, 13 that lived, and they all married happily together. But my own brother, Al, had only 4 children. After one time, my one that had 14 children, his wife got TB, and she had to go into sanitarium in Salem. In those days, it was Salem. Now they can go in Portland. And so she had a baby, and she couldn't take the baby along, so my oldest brother that didn't have any children took the little baby and kept it for a whole year. And he didn't like to leave it. And after that, her maternal instincts developed, and she got 4 little boys, one after the other. And all of them are married except one. And they got the nice children, too. And my brother Joe's, all his children all came out very well, too. Some of them only have 4, and some have 5. But the 2 that have the 12 and the, and the 9, yeah, they really have. 2 of them live out by Hillsboro. They go to St. Matthew's School there. And they all have good jobs. Most of them are mechanics or electricians or something like that. Even one of the girls is an electrician, and she married a man that was an electrician.
Oh. Now, do you have sisters?
Yes, I have just 2 sisters. And one sister is here as a nun, Sister Joan, and she takes care of the park. We were both teachers, but when we retired, we did other jobs since we stopped teaching. I stopped in 1972, and she stopped earlier. Her job, it was hard for her to teach. It was difficult. She and I are so different. It's just marvelous how different we are. And my other sister got married to a man by the name of Frank Moore, and he lives down in Beaverton. He was a barber, and he barbers off and on, you know, for people that want to take a vacation, and he's full of the old Irish. And one of my teachers, she's still living, and she was one of the first ones to teach down in the new school in St. Cecilia's. Mm. And she says she always remembers that she had 4 little riggers going to school, first, second, third, and fourth grade. So when we started to school, I was the oldest one. First 2 years we went down to St. Mary's of the Valley because we couldn't walk that far. But when I began to be in the third grade, they bought a horse and a little buggy. And so all 4 of us, no, 3 the first year, and then the next year one more boy joined, and we went on a buggy. 2 sat in the back. I was a driver because I was the oldest one. Mama made me a nice little pair of mittens with rabbit skin in them, and I was really proud of those mittens. And anyway, and the 2 boys sat in the front. Of course, when it rained, I forgot what we did. I guess we covered them up or something. And that we did that for about 2 years. And one day, we had quite a experience that the horse, when we were about 2 miles away from home, got too tired, wouldn't go anymore. So a man with a load of lumber, one of our neighbors, there was a sawmill about a mile away from us, and I don't know why he was loading lumber to his mill, sawmill, and he took a switch and a buggy whip, I guess, and whipped the horse and got it going again. So he watched us, and it went for another mile. Then we had to turn off, and he had to go to his sawmill. And we had muddy roads. There were no rock roads or anything, so we all piled out of the buggy and stepped into the mud and pushed the buggy.
Oh, my gosh.
And he went another half a mile up a steep hill, and then he flopped down. Didn't get up.
Oh,
so here we were, 4 little shivering youngsters trying to know what to do with a horse on the road. And the road was so narrow with trees on each side that you couldn't pass them except in certain spots. So The two oldest ones went home, and two younger ones stayed with the horse. So I happened to be one of the older ones, and we were saying the rosary all during the time we were. Because we didn't know what was going to happen. Daddy wasn't home. He was, he had to sell apples and things at the markets, stores and things in Portland every so often, once or twice a week. It took about 3 hours to get to Portland with a horse and wagon, you know, a load of things. So when he came home, Mama told him all about the story, and he came that evening with a bucket of water and another bucket of oats and things, and put it and shoved the horse against the off of the road into the fence, and put a lantern there so it would be. Next morning, Dad came to that same place where the horse was again, and he decided that that horse isn't ever going to get up again. So he told a neighbor to get rid of him, sell him. So he had to dig the grave, shoot him, dig the grave. And our horse was named Prince. So whenever Daddy's team would go past that place where that horse was, there was this, I don't know how they knew it. They'd snort and make all kinds of, go way out away from where the horse even lay there that day before. Well, every time we passed that special place on that hill where that horse fell, we'd say, there's where Prince was buried. We still say that. We know exactly the spot and everything else. So that's
a one. That's a wonderful, it's a wonderful sad story.
Yeah, it is.
How old were you at the time?
I was in the fourth grade. Let me see, I must have been 8, 9, 10, must have been about 10 or 11 years old. And I had to stay in the first grade an extra year, because when I started school, we always had talked German, and I didn't know a word of English. So I had a language barrier when I started school. The others didn't have that. So the first year I was all by myself. I went to St. Mary's as a boarder. And my aunt, Sister Presencia, was there, and she helped me out because she knew German and I didn't know English, so we got together quite a few.
So you were the oldest in the family?
Oh, yes, out of eight. Mm-hmm. The two youngest ones died. Mama was working too hard on the farm, slashing and cutting, helping make fences and things like that when the two boys died. So it was a good thing that the one that was a cripple did die. We got another one after that. So another time when we used to go to church on Sundays, and even when we went to school, Mama would take bricks and put them in the oven and warm them and put them in the buggy when we went to school. And on Sundays, each one of us would have a brick to put on our feet. So, see, 4 miles, 5 miles, that takes quite a while, and the horses didn't always run either, especially when we had our old nag. And finally, we decided that our old nag wasn't going fast enough. We got too cold sitting in the buggy. So we said, Mama, can't we please walk? Well, I had to stay in the buggy and drive the horse. The others walked, and they went on ahead because the horse was too slow. Well, finally they gave in. We had two horses. The first one, that's the one that died. And the second one, we convinced Papa and Mama to sell it. And so after that, we walked every day. And so maybe you would like to know what happened to the horse when we went to school.
Yes.
Well, about, must have been about 7 or 8 blocks from the school, there was a big grain mill, and there it was owned by a Catholic by the name of Mr. Music. And so we got permission from that grain mill to build a little shed. And we had a little bin, a little place where we took a whole sack of grain, hay, and put it out in the thing every morning when we came, took the halter off of the horse. And in the evening we got back, of course the bricks weren't warm anymore, we got cool. And once in a while that horse was stubborn. We couldn't get the bridle on, so we had to go and ask the man in the mill He was a good man. He was very gentle and kind and nice to us, so he put the bridle on for us. But didn't happen too often.
Were you the only children who were coming to school by horse and wagon?
I think so, yes. All the others either walked or they lived close enough. I don't remember of anybody else having a horse and buggy. And Sundays we went to church in our wagon.
This is a continuation of an interview with Sister Beatrice Reigard at St. Mary's Convent by Shirley Tanzer for the Beaverton History Project. This is Take One, Side Two. Tanzer.
Wagon.
Yes, tell me about you going to church.
Going to church. Well, Mama had placed a blanket between the driver in the front of the wagon. It was a real wagon. It was a big... See, he had to take it to town with 40 boxes of apples, and they put something in the back. And we sat in on two boards with boxes and with our nice warm bricks on our feet. And after the services were finished, we'd go out and take our breakfast. And Mom would have a 2-quart jar of hot chocolate and buns or whatever it was, I don't know.
Where was the church?
You know where Damaro is?
Yes.
Wait, it was there.
Damaro, so that would be Cedar Hill.
Right on the TV highway.
Mm-hmm. Tualatin Valley Highway.
Yeah, that's right, Tualatin Valley Highway. Mm-hmm. And Berg's, where the Berg's clothes shop was. That's the priest's house. That was the priest's house. And just maybe about 15 steps or so, the school and the church was built together. But before that, the church was, remember where the Highland house was? Anna Highland lived there in the corner.
Oh, yes, yes.
Down at the end of that same street, mm-hmm, where the Damaro is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the place where the old church was.
What was the name of the church?
Well, that's a nice story.
Please tell
Father
me.
Father LaMiller, who was the first pastor, appointed the first pastor. There wasn't any church. So he... heard of a place where they were selling a cheese factory. And so Father LaMiller, let's see, what's his first name? He's my godfather anyway in baptism. And I forgot his first name, LaMiller. Anyway, he bought that and gave it the name of St. Mary's Church. And we had a great big pot-bellied stove. I remember very distinctly, my sister and I, we got close to the first bench near where the store was, so we'd get warm. And Father LaMiller didn't stay there too long. I have a list of all the pastors that have been there. He came from Cedar Mills. See, Cedar Mills is the mother church of the Beaverton. And Cedar Mills got their priest from Verbort, because Verbort got started first. And Father O'Flynn says that he was the first one to be the pastor of Beaverton, and the last one to be the pastor of Cedar Mills.
Mm.
And the priest that went to Cedar Mills to say Mass came sometimes from Cathedral and sometimes from Verbort. And once in a while they had church up at Cooper Mountain. So the priest that went to say church, have services at Cooper Mountain, St. Peter and Paul Church. That's the name of the church. And there were maybe about 20 families up there, nice, good Catholic families. And finally, the priest, Father, I'll tell you about Cedar Mills. They had, it started in 1800s, and once in a while, when the priest came from Portland to say Mass at Cedar at Cooper Mountain, they would stay at our place because only half a mile away. It wasn't really a big mountain, but they stayed there. And
is that church still there?
Oh no, it was torn down around 1920s or something around there. A man tore it down. I have it here somewheres. when it was torn
down.
That's
the Church of Peter and Paul.
Yeah, that's right, St. Peter and Paul. Archbishop Grew, that's starting. They had a boarding school at Cedar Mills. It burnt down, and then a church and a school and the sister's house all burnt down the first few years, and then they built it up again. Sisters from New Zealand came, Mercy Sisters from New Zealand came there. And the sisters at Verborg Parish came from our own community. And but our community was assigned to go. The archbishop that was reigning at that time was Gross, and he was interested in having an orphanage, a home for the boys that didn't have any home. So they built St. Mary's Home. And we supplied three of those sisters there. We started out with babies, taking care of babies, and we were not nurses or anything. We were just beginning our own selves in 1886. We came back out from Minnesota. No, Wisconsin. That's where our first community started, from Wisconsin. They moved out to Oregon, Sublimity. You know where Sublimity is, near Salem and
yes,
Staten there.
Yes. But now you're talking about the Order of Sisters of St.
Mary. Yeah, yeah. And but we never did teach out at Cedar Mills. But then they left later on because I don't know why they left, but anyway, they didn't stay at Cedar Mills because they found out that Beaverton was having a school. We built it in 1912.
Sister Beatrice, what I wanted to ask you was about, is the elementary school St. Agatha's?
Yes, right. They never was. Well, I think for a few years they did teach a couple of high school classes, but it wasn't too long.
So it's St. Agatha's, St. Cecilia's, and then St. Mary's, and they're all connected. Is that
correct? In what way do you mean when you're connected? They're separate parishes.
I see.
And each parish takes care of its own school.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people that belong to that area, they have to pay for the sisters for teaching there and things like that.
But it's connected by the teaching sisters.
Of St. Mary's.
Yes.
Right.
That is what I'm interested
yes,
in.
Yes. We have all these schools here. That's the first copy of the magazine that they started when they started teaching high school and had this. See, volume 1 and volume 9, so that would be in June. And that's my niece.
Oh.
That little girl is my niece, Patty, the one out of the 14 children.
When did you decide to become a nun?
When I was in the fifth grade.
What was the influence?
Well, because I had aunts. I have two other ones in another community, but we weren't very well acquainted, except to writing letters and things like that.
Who are your two other aunts?
They belong to the Sisters of Notre School Sisters of Notre Dame in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's where they entered, but they had a split because they were too big. They couldn't have proper government with so many nuns, so they split, and one became Mankato province and the other came Milwaukee province. So my two aunts had a split because at that time when that happened, she was teaching in the Milwaukee province and the other one was teaching in Mankato. So I happened to have the privilege of being at at Mankato for her Diamond Jubilee. Mm-hmm. In 1965. It was a wonderful experience. We had never been out of Oregon. My sister and I, Sister Joan and I, we spent a day and a night, I guess, on the train. And we spent 5 days at that community where our Diamond Jubilarian was Sister, her name was Mother Nunciata, because she was Mother General for 12 years. And they had about 2,000 sisters. And she died in just shortly after we made that trip, about 3-4 years. But she was just a wonderful superior and mother general. They all loved her very, very much. And her other sister, which she was in a nursing home in a place called Mequon. It belonged to Milwaukee. It was a nursing home for all of her sisters when they had surgery or had to be put in a hospital or a nursing home. And we went to visit her, too. She was well taken care of. And she was able to do things for other sisters that were not as good off as she was. She would put on the record player and play for the people that were in bed, and she'd help them with stamp collections. And she was able to be around and talk to them. And some of these sisters, when we went through their infirmary, they had been superior generals. They had been superiors and head sisters in big academies, and there they were, perfectly like a child.
How were these two sisters in Wisconsin related to you?
They're my mother's sisters.
Oh, I see.
And these two that were joined our community here, they were my mother's sisters too. They were the two youngest ones, and the other one was about the two oldest ones.
How many children were there in your mother's family?
12. Only six lived. Six of them died. All of them as babies except one. She got 12 years old. She died of something like, I forgot what they call it. Anyway, obstruction of the bowels. Mm-hmm. I forgot what they call
colitis.
It.
Colitis?
No, it wasn't colitis, something worse than that. And when she died, they had already planned to move to another town to St. Paul, I forget, Jordan, from Jordan to St. Paul, or St. Paul to Jordan, either one. And they took the body along. And it was winter time, cold, and they said, my mother always said she looked like a wax corpse, because she was just perfectly frozen. Mm-hmm. And they buried her, they wanted to have her buried to the place where they were moving to. And that house where they had lived in Jordan, we have a picture of that in the family somewhere. It was Stone House.
Now you're talking about Minnesota.
Yes, that's my mother's family. Mm-hmm. My mother was married by that time. No, she wasn't either. No, Mama didn't move out here yet when that happened. She must have lived. She was the oldest one, and when she was in the fifth grade, she had to quit school to help financially with the rest of the children, and she worked where they sold clothes. She sewed linings for fur coats. She must have been a pretty good seamstress, because that takes a lot of know-how. And that's all I remember of her saying that she did when she left home. She worked in factories.
Mm-hmm. So there were only the two children in her family who got married. The four became nuns. And then
mm-hmm. My mother got married. Marie didn't get married. Well, I think my mother is the only one that got married out of the 12 children. See, there were only six left. One, two, three, four. Four became nuns. My mom was the fifth one. And Marie was the old maid. She's the old maid. She couldn't get along with my mother.
Oh.
She was modern type. My mother was the old type.
Oh.
Are you going to put that down?
Yeah, sure. Of course. Well, nothing wrong with saying
no.
Somebody's modern and somebody is a bit old fashioned.
Yeah.
Did your Aunt Marie spend time with you? Or?
Not very much. They tried to live together, but it wouldn't work. She was a seamstress. She made money by making dresses and things like that. She was a good seamstress, but she lived in Canada most of the time, so we didn't see her very much at all.
I see.
But
so the influence upon you, the influence of your aunts,
mm-hmm.
was the thing that persuaded you to become a nun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I was born, I was a premature. I didn't even weigh 4 pounds, and they didn't even expect me to be born yet. They didn't have anything ready for me, not even clothes. Wrapped me up in a blanket the next morning and got me baptized in a blanket.
Oh.
Grandma didn't come out and help, you know, get things ready. I guess she thought, well, there's a lot of time yet. I don't know how much premature I was. People asked me that, and I said, Mama didn't ever tell me how soon. That was the way it happened that we got... Let's see now.
Talking about your decision to become.
Oh
to
yeah,
become a nun.
But one time, the clinching of it was, When I was in church, Mass on Sunday, I don't know if you're Catholic or not. You understand?
No, oh, but I do understand.
Well, you know what? You understand what I'm talking about. And when they read the gospel from the liturgy from the Bible, there was one sentence that really gave me the inspiration. Many are called, but few are chosen. And that decided me. And my teacher, who was a very holy nun, her name is Sister Aquinas. And she entered when she was quite old. And in that family, there are four nuns also came to our community. They're all dead, though, now. But they were a wonderful family from Verbort. She was a teacher at Greenville School in Verbort, this sister that I had. When she got older, she decided she's going to be a nun, too. And so she used to talk about being a sister and things like that. And even in the classroom, she talked about vocations and things like that. I remember one thing she had us do as a teacher, which was a nice custom. She had done it in other schools where she had taught, to have what they call pen pals. Now, that was way back in 1913, 14. We had pen pals already. And I always wrote to her, and that one pen pal is still living. She lived out towards Roy, between Roy and Verbort. Luella, I forgot what her last name was, Luella Kindle. Her niece is still, she's in our convent too, Sister, what's her name, Sister Marcella Kindle. She got MS. We have two sisters that have MS.
Mm.
One is walking with four legs, two on one arm, and then she had braces on her legs too. And oh, she's a marvelous inspiration to everybody that sees her. Her outlook on life is just marvelous. She keeps track of medical and Blue Cross. You know how much that work entails for the whole community, all the different.
How many sisters are there?
Well, we have about 180, but they're not all here now. They're out teaching,
mm-hmm.
And there are about 80 of them during the winter time.
How did your family react to your decision?
They were happy. They've been praying ever since I was born that I'd be a sister. Yeah, it was through prayer that I was able to be strong enough to, because they had to carry me on in a basket, in a chew box. I was so small. And they really worked hard on God taking care of me and making me strong enough that I could be a sister. I remember walking. Later on, when we were older, we walked to school. I used to get what they call run down in the spring. I'd have to quit school at least nearly 2 weeks and get a tonic, and it was just quite a hard on me.
Now, you walked from Cooper's Mountain
to St. Mary's first, and then to Beaverton later on.
Mm-hmm.
All four of us did. Later on, after I graduated in 1920, my two brothers got bicycles. Of course, they had to leave them the foot of the hill because the roads were too muddy. Somebody had a garage at the foot of the hill. Well, my father later on got a Rio truck, and he left it at one of the neighbors during the daytime. And when we didn't use it, we had good neighbors. I must tell you, on the way to school, in the first few years, when we walked, we had about four or five different ways we could go to school, you know, all kinds of different roads. And one road was, there was a lot of woods, and there happened to be an old log cabin there. And, of course, like children are, there was a log bed there and some straw on it, and no doors or windows in it, and we'd sit down there and take a rest.
Oh.
Then, I guess it was around, Daddy got into his head that he needs to have more land, so he got four brothers that were called Moore, Arthur, Leslie, Daniel Floyd. I remembered him. And they lived in that log cabin. They fixed it up all winter. And you know that winter, they couldn't work for weeks. It was so cold and full of snow. Hmm. Just happened to strike it bad luck. Hmm. But they got finished. Spring came and they got finished clearing that land, you know, blasting the stumps and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that's where our biggest main orchard was. And in the beginning, way early in 1903 and 1904, when they first moved onto the farm, during the winter time, the apples fell down on the ground and they could see bear tracks. The bears helped themselves with the apples that fell down on the ground.
Did you ever see any bears?
No, I was too old. I mean, that happened before I knew what was happening. Mom, Dad saw the tracks. And the deer would come to our back by the barn not too long ago. And he would see that deer look up at him, and my brother had bought some beautiful new variety of Gravensteins. They were real bright red cheeks on them, and they were his prize apples. And he got permission from the, hunting and
game
commission to that he was losing a lot of crop because of the deer coming. And he got his gun, and looked at the deer. Put his gun down. I can't shoot that deer. And let it go, let him have the apples.
Now, when did you leave home and officially join the order?
In September the 8th, 1921. There's a quite an interesting episode that happened the day before I entered. Mama was and Daddy were very proud. They bought a brand new car, Ford, mm-hmm. touring car, the day before. Mama took it to Portland to work. She sold after Dad couldn't make enough money by selling it to the stores. It was too wholesale type. Mm-hmm. So they had what they call a public market, mm-hmm. Yamuel Street.
Yes.
And so she worked there for 19 years, standing out and letting people come and buy. And that's when we started making money. Mm. We had to dig a well because our well wouldn't give enough water up at Coop Mountain. It's hard to get water at Coop Mountain. Mm-hmm. They had to take barrels and a sled and go down the valley and get some neighbors to donate the water for us to drink and do our washing.
Is that what you did all the years up at Coop Mountain?
Well, quite a number of summers we had to do that just in the summertime.
Mm. What did you do in the winter?
We had cisterns. Mm-hmm. You know what a cistern is?
Oh, yes.
Right by the house. Mm-hmm. But then summertime came, they dried. Right up. We had a cistern at the barn. Well, that lasted longer because it filled up all winter. We didn't have to take any water for the cows, mm-hmm. only for human consumption. Mm-hmm. So I tell you about that car. Mama, I went to Portland that day with Mama, and she left about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning and went home about 5 o'clock from Portland. And when Mama came to the car where she had it parked, those days they weren't parking lots. We didn't get any parking tickets or anything like that. Remember that big deer that was down in town?
Southwest Maine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, she had it parked on that street. And when she got there that evening, no car. It had been stolen. So that was a bad luck. So I had to go in the truck with my trunk to the convent.
Oh, did they ever find it?
Well, this was in September, 20th of September. They found it in December in Washington along a neglected farm. And some army man had to get to headquarters and just stole that car that nobody was in, you see, brand new car, Ford. And Mama had put a triangular pennant on the back of the car. And that was her main identification when they found the car that proved that was her car. It had been changed with all kinds of tires and speedometer and other fixtures that they put on. They couldn't fix it. They bought a new one.
Oh, my.
But 4 months, September, October, November, December.
Now, when you came to the order, where did you go?
At headquarters, what we call our mother house. Mm-hmm. And that was, where's that page? Yeah, here it is. No, yeah, this is the one. Oh, I guess that isn't the page. It has the old... that isn't it. Before we had the one we have now. See, that's the one we have now. We had another one. Here it is. See, this is where I entered.
Mm-hmm.
This was the chapel. This was the academy.
Mm-hmm.
This
that
was the dormitory.
St. Mary's building.
Yes.
The first
St. Mary's Institute. We call it Institute. The other one was St. Mary's Home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was only about a half a block on going this way. And that's... I don't have the old building of St. Mary's Home for Boys here. So that's where I went. And this was the older sister's division here.
Mm-hmm.
And these were dormitories up in here.
This was the attic.
How
often did you see your family once you...
Well, whenever they had visiting days, they used to have visiting days, and if anything happened, they used to bring fruit down because they needed fruit down here at this end of the dock. And when they found out that we were feeding our apples that were culls to our pigs, why, they decided that they're going to come up and pick them and use them for their applesauce. We were very, very poor when they first began, very poor. They used to use applesauce instead of butter because butter was too expensive, except on Sundays, I think.
At the Institute, right.
Mm-hmm. And so we had to really save an awful lot. We had a barn, we had our cows, we had pigs, we butchered our pigs, we had hired men that would do all those kind of jobs, and so...
How many people were living at the Institute? How many
sisters?
Women, how many sisters?
There were about 125, because I was number 125 when I came.
Oh.
I'm now 120.
Oh.
We kept our number because five of them left the community. We keep our numbers after they're dead. We keep the numbers.
I see.
And I think we have a big cemetery out here. There must be at least over 100 of them buried out there. And they have a plan. They keep the families and relations in the same area that we know where we're going to be buried. Blueprint, as they call it.
What about the Cooper Mountain Cemetery?
That's still there.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, pardon me, excuse me. My brother and another man helped for days and months to fix that up. It had been neglected for years.
But now, do you have family buried up there?
My brother's oldest girl that died when she was a baby. She was born in August and she died in October.
Mm-hmm.
And she had obstruction of the bowel. She was born that way. And they had a surgery. They took out the part that was obstructed, but it was too much of a strain and she died after the surgery. Mary Ann is her name, Mary Ann Riggert. They got the names of the people that are buried there. And so.
But she's the only member of your family
buried
there.
Uh-huh.
Now, did your parents continue to live up in Cooper Mountain until...
My brother left there in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mama, of course, my brother lived there, but my father and mother, they left earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they left when they needed the physical care.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But until the time that they did they continue to live and farm?
Yes, uh-huh. Joe and Aunt took care of them for a while. And when they got that, they couldn't, manage to take care of them with all their children. They took them to Maryville. My sister, Mary Ann Home, that was in Sublimity. It wasn't this nursing home, because this one wasn't built until 1962.
Mm-hmm.
See? And then
well, what, What do you remember as a child about Beaverton?
About Beaverton?
Yes.
Well, I remember about Cooper Mountain, one of the things that we always liked to hear was the chivalries that whenever anybody got married, we would listen to the shooting or the blasting, you know, and they had beer parties, I guess, and things like that.
And Cooper Mountain?
Yes, and in the neighborhood.
Oh. And
that's one thing I remember as a child. And then on 4th of July, we always had a big picnic, and one of the families, never had it in our area, but next neighbor, they were kind of influential, and they all came to that place. We had.
So Cooper Mountain actually was quite separated from Beaverton at that time.
Oh yes. See, it was way out in the muddy roads, you know, nobody would go up there except when we had church. The sisters from St. Mary's here, when there were funerals for people that lived up that way, they would come up in a surrey. You know what a surrey looks like?
Yes.
The fancy little fringes? And we had a darkie that used to work for us, and he'd be the driver. And they would sing the high mass for the person that died.
How many people would you say lived on Cooper Mountain? How many families? Yes, you're almost 60 years.
Yeah.
You have been in the order.
Mm-hmm, right.
In the order. And is it next year that you have a celebration?
Yes, in July 11th, 1982.
And how many, what were you saying, how many had joined at the same time?
Six of us were joined, but one wasn't able to continue for certain reasons. And four of those were teenagers, 17 and 18 years old. One, we used to ask her how old she was. She said, "I'm old enough to be your grandmother." She never would tell us how old she was. Later on, I found out she was in the 30s already. It was, ordinarily, they don't take them that, but they made exceptions. They do make exceptions. And she died before she made her 50 years as a nun. But she sure was a good sport. Oh, she was a good sport with our teenage sisters. Now, there are three of us left.
And you will all be celebrating together?
Well, we don't know. There's one that's got cancer, and we don't know if she'll make it or not. So there'll be only two if she doesn't make it. The other two died.
We will hope that...
Mm-hmm. The grandma one died already.
You were telling me about the... you were telling me something about the St. Cecilia's and the Basket socials.
Oh, yes. Out in the lawn between the... We had the new church then. I remember that very well. And we played Last Couple Out, you know that game?
Yes, yes. Tell me...
But I don't know what basket I paid for for the social. But... We had a lot of fun. I wasn't very old then yet. I wasn't a teenager yet because I came to the Common when I was just 17, you know.
Oh, you did. You came very, very early.
My sister was 21 before she came. She had to stay home and take care of the little baby. I mean, well, not the little baby, but the youngest one.
The youngest girl. Let me ask you, tell me the schools that you went to.
Mm-hmm. St. Mary's Institute and St. Cecilia's. Mm-hmm. That was a great school. Then I went to University of Portland for my college degree. And that's all I went.
I see. Now, were you in the order by the time you
went
to
University of Portland? Oh, yes. We took an extension course from Eugene in the summertime. But they wanted us to be full-fledged sooner than just going to summer school. So some of the sisters went a whole year, and now that's what they do when they join the convent if they haven't got their... Most of them are supposed to have college degrees, but as a teaching order, we need special subjects that they didn't take when they were going to college as before entering the convent. So they still have to go to University of Portland or State University, Portland State, and they go during the year, too, to get the credentials that are necessary for the subjects that we teach in our high schools.
And what did you teach?
I taught from first grade to eighth grade, all kinds of, and I taught for 13 years at St. Mary's Home for Boys. That was quite a record, and a lot of memories, happy memories are there. St. Mary's Home for Boys. I was there when they had the old home, and then I helped move in 1930 to the new home. And that was a very memorable day, that they moved from the old home to the new home.
Why? What was so memorable?
Well, because all the boys, see, we had the new home already, but that was just for the high school. And so all the other younger ones were in the, down here in the old home, you call it. And then they decided that they had to move out of the old home because it was a fire hazard. So the day that they moved, August, I think it was August the 20th or something around there, I went looked out the window, and I saw going through the field, dusty road that the when they would do their plowing and things, it was real dusty. And I saw all the little boys with a big pillowcase, all their belongings in the pillowcase, walking through that field, just big cloud of dust. That evening there were no boys around. They were all at the other home already. But to see those boys taking their belongings on their backs, they each had a little closet in the room that they slept in, the dormitory they slept, and took their shoes and their stockings and whatever they had. That was really impressed me very much to see all those little boys.
Do you keep in touch with the boys?
Yes. Last year we had the first what they call reunion of the boys, and they just loved it. They wanted it every 2 years, so next year we're going to have another one. Mm-hmm. And I help one of the older sisters that these boys loved very much, and I help her write letters for her because she's not able to communicate very well and write. She doesn't spell very good. Boys worked for her many, many years out in the garden, and they remember her. And they say every time they come back, "You sisters were our mothers, and the priest was like our father." They just are so grateful because we took such good care of them and trained them so well that when the war broke out and the recruiter came around, they said, "Bring us some more of those boys. We don't need to train them. They know what it means to obey. They know how it means to keep their clothes clean and all those things." And some of the boys lost their lives in that war too. They would come back as often as they possibly could. And one of the boys, when he died, he gave all his money, his insurance money, to the home for a swimming pool. With that money, he was going to give it to father, but they said that wasn't allowed to do that in the Navy. Happened to be a Navy boy, and so they got a nice outdoor swimming pool.
How many boys are in the home today?
About 30. Mm-hmm. We had 165. They tore down the old building. Mm-hmm. It was a fire hazard. And the new building, they take what they call disadvantaged children. Mm-hmm. And they're put there by the children's Catholic division. Mm-hmm. in downtown Portland. And they have nearly one teacher for a pupil. They need special training and special care. I think they have what they call, where they do shop work. Mm-hmm. Because some of them, that's about all they can do. Technical training. And so these boys, every chance they get, they come out and visit. Mm-hmm. And the sisters are getting fewer and fewer that know them. Mm-hmm. There's one railroad man that came way back in 1914-15, and he comes out and we have dinner. We are allowed now to have people visit and have meals with us for dinner. And his name is Mr. Klapervich, and he knows our archbishop, who's going to celebrate 105 years living.
This is
Archbishop Howard.
Yes. Oh, mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And he's not able to perform any services. He's just barely able to walk around. Once in a while, the nurses take him out to his home where he lived across the street. He has a house there, and they take him out to look at the park and things like that. But some days he's not even communicable. But many days he's interesting to talk to. He can remember things, and he remember your family. He knows our family, and every time he asks, what about Joe? What is he doing? And things like that.
Isn't that amazing?
And one of my nephews, my sister's husband, rather, is a barber, and he used to go and barber his hair, and he goes to see him yet, but he doesn't have much hair on his head anymore, but he just, you know, for sociability, you know. And so that's Frank Moore. My sister's Frank Moore, Archbishop is really one of, he would stay in his house as long as he could, until one time he went out for a walk by himself after supper, and they didn't find him until about 9:30 that evening. He had a fall, and he could not get up off the ground. Mm-hmm. And after that, they moved into Maryville.
How many years ago was that?
That's about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And this old Mr. Klapperwitz, that railroad man, he goes to see him every time. He's a very good friend of his. And we had one boy that was what we call a foundling. He was put in a basket and laid in the front steps of our orphanage around 1900. His name is Lawrence Fernsworth. Now, the boys that went to high school there are getting together and are writing a history of the boys' home and of the different boys. They're all, one of our sisters is helping too. Her name is Sister Christina, and she gets these different boys to give input. Mm-hmm. And there's one Indian boy, no, a Mexican boy, Mexican Indian, I think he is. He's a specialist in Indian history. He works for the government. He's over in church. Let's see, what's the name of the back east. And his name is Ricardo Martinez. He's an Indian. And he writes to us, and he has taken care of two Vietnamese, I think they're Vietnamese, boys, and trained them and got them a good job, put them through college, and got a good job for them now. And he's taking in some other ones now. And he writes and tells about, and he visits us. He came 2 years ago and stayed about 2 weeks with us. And we treated him royally and everything. And one of the things that impressed him was that we had a sister that is a real Indian.
Mm.
And she was the one that volunteered to go to the missions down in Peru. Her name is Sister Kateri, and she had, there were four sisters that went down there, got rheumatoid arthritis. She's all crippled with her hands and her feet, mm-hmm. but she's still out teaching, very capable person. She's Indian from Grand Ronde, Grand Ronde Indian. Her parents are still living. They're very proud of her.
Now, is she here now?
Oh, she's teaching in Portland.
Oh.
Yeah, she's with us.
Is it what school? Where?
I think it's St. Agatha's. I wouldn't know. I think it's St. Agatha's. We have a list of the sisters where they are, and I can't keep track. But I'm
kidding. After you left St. Mary, the boys' school, then where did you go from there?
I went to Milwaukee School. That was a very big school. We had about 17 sisters there. No, not 17. Four of them went to college and stayed with us. That would be 13. There were about 13 teachers there. We had a couple of lay teachers too. It was a very large school. It's not so large now. This is it right here. No, that's Tillamook. Where's Milwaukee? Here it is. But it's a little bit changed. Not quite the same. This is, they got a new church now. And my room is right about in here somewhere. One year I
taught the fifth grade, and next year I taught the seventh grade. Yes. What years was
72.
And then
40. When I started teaching, left St. Mary's home, that was 43, something around there. Mm-hmm. And I taught for 2 years there.
So then you went from in 43-44, you went over to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And then did you return to Portland?
I came back to St. Mary's during the summertime. We always come back to St. Mary's. And then, let's see, where did I go from there? I have written down where I went from one year to the other, because I changed around all the time. I think I went to St. Stephen's. No, I was in St. Stephen's before that. I was in St. Stephen's in 1923, very first mission, very first place I got. The sister got sick, and that sister that got sick didn't come back anymore, and so the teacher that I took the place for had 50 first and second graders, and this was in December, so she had a good start on the children. And that sister had to go to teach the eighth grade. From the first grade, she had to teach the eighth grade.
Where is St. Stephen's?
It's out on Taylor Street, near Mount Tabor, and near All Saints Parish, and near, well, it's out in that direction.
And then what did you do after Milwaukee?
I went to different schools. I went from one place to the other. I went to Sublimity, and I went to Jervis, and I went to, Jervis, and I should have brought the list of places where I was. I haven't got it with me.
Were you at St. Cecilia's?
No, I was appointed one time, and then just as I was ready to go teach down there, Mother General said, I think it's too cold for you. She knew I had arthritis, and I'm going to put somebody else there. And that sister went down that took my place, and she's dead already now, a long time ago.
Oh.
And here I'm still plugging along. My arthritis and all other.
Well, your parents lived to be quite old.
57, my mother was, and my daddy was 60. No. That's when they died, 57,
right.
and 1960.
So they
one was 83, and my daddy must have been, he was 2 years older than my mother. I don't know, in the 80s.
So they've lived, and so the genes are good. And
and all the Rigert family, there are a lot of Rigerts around Beaverton.
They
married good Catholic people.